Blog Talk Radio.
It was inevitable, Bo, wasn't it? Think about
this. Oh, yes.
Two guys who seemingly know quite a bit about baseball getting together to talk about baseball. Who would have thought it? Who would have thunk this one, Bo? Seriously, the Power Alley today. Welcome, everybody, to the first ever edition of the Power Alley. You know, a nice little compilation for the 2015 baseball season. And I got to be honest with you, this is kind of nice because for Bo and I, it's kind of our wheelhouse. Of course, for those here in the Pacific Northwest who listen to the then Hot Still Report, which is now the OFP Report on 1090thefan.com, you'll hear me, Jason Churchill, and Alex Carson discuss a little something about the Seattle Mariners all season long. And for those in the Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas area, those who intimately know Bo Reed down there from letstalkrangers.com, you certainly know exactly what he brings to the table, but it's not just specifically designed for Seattle Mariners talk and Texas Rangers talk, although you will hear quite a bit of it because, well, quite frankly, we can't help ourselves. This show is going to be geared a lot around the American League because, you know, for the most part, Bo, we reside in the American League, and again, we can't help ourselves. But that doesn't mean it's specifically going to be, geared and tailored towards just American League baseball. There is the senior circuit, the National League, so we'll be discussing a lot about the National League in its entirety as the season goes along. But, Bo, I got to be honest with you, man. Power Alley, you and I. This is getting back to the old MLB inside the numbers type of days. We'll have some pretty good guests as the season goes along. But Bo, it's going to be good just talking about baseball. We don't have to talk about the Seahawks or the Cowboys or Dez Bryant or whatever the case may be.
Thank God.
We can just focus and nerd out where our nerd loyalties lay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all.
I personally love the fact that I don't have to talk about Dez Bryant right now. I really don't want to.
Yeah. You and me both. So we have the coffee on. We got the coffee on. We're ready to talk baseball, both. So let's go ahead and let's not waste anybody's time that are tuning in that want to listen to a little bit of baseball talk. So let's get right into it and let's span the globe for our featured topics today. So let's go ahead and do that. No music. Topic number one, Bo. Topic number one, Josh Hamilton is facing a lengthy suspension due to his drug relapse. Hamilton, who at one point in time was suspended for quite a bit of time. As a matter of fact, he was suspended from, I believe it was, I want to say from 2004. Yeah, February 18th, 2004, roughly 3 years, 2.5 to June 1st, 2006 is the core of this issue, Bo, because a lot of people didn't realize that. But, it was only originally that suspension was only supposed to be for a year, but it was later extended to 2005 due to some quote-unquote additional violations. And then it was again extended in 2006 before Bud Selig reinstated him. So a lot of people are wondering exactly what type of penalties are going to be handed down to Josh Hamilton. It could be as short as 25 games, or it could also be as big as being a year. A lot of people don't know whether or not he's going to be a fourth-time offender, which was why he would get the year, or if he would be a second-time offender, considering the prior suspension. So it's pretty broad. But at the base of this core, Bo, I got to be honest with you, I have zero sympathy for Josh Hamilton. Zero.
Oh, I've got none either. I think that this is going to come down to, and not necessarily a part of this, of the CBA, I think this is going to be under the guidance of, at the discretion of the commissioner of baseball at this point.
Right.
And it's such a weird situation because, you already documented what happened to him when he was in the minor leagues. He's had a couple of relapses. He had two in Texas. Now he's had another one. This is going to fall under the discretion of the commissioner at this point, which is why he went to New York and met with the commissioner. I mean, that's why. If it was going to be strictly 25, 50, first offense, second offense, he wouldn't have had to do that.
No, he met with the commissioner because he knew he was about to get busted. So it's easy just to snitch yourself out before it makes headlines. And, you were talking about those relapses in Texas. As big as those were, they weren't these type of relapses where cocaine was involved. It was Josh Hamilton maybe at a bar. A couple pictures were taken. And as bad as that is, because we're talking about a guy, Bo, who literally is not the greatest of functioning drug addicts out there. A lot of people don't seem to realize this, Bo, is all drug addicts have one thing in common. They're compulsive. They make these type of decisions based on when there's stressful situations, they don't necessarily have the proper tools or even the structure system around them to protect themselves from them, these type of situations will happen. And the thing I question about this is Josh Hamilton's decision-making back in the day when he signed this contract with the Angels. I'm not saying that he should have taken less to stay in Texas, because you know me. I'm all about a player getting as much money as he possibly can, because, again, that's the structure of Major League Baseball. If somebody's going to offer him $125 million over five, you take your money and you take that money to the bank and you run with it. But
sure.
But this is not a normal situation, Bo. Josh Hamilton is a drug addict, okay? And there are certain things that are a little bit more important than just money. To me, I always ask this question, and I asked this, you know, a couple days ago to Jason Churchill. And I said, what's the difference between $80 million and $125 million? Absolutely nothing as far as I'm concerned, because guess what? You're still being paid very handsomely, and certain things are a little bit more important than just taking the contract. In Texas, Josh Hamilton had a very good structure in Arlington, from John Daniels to Ron Washington to Ian Kinsler to Mike Napoli to Adrian Beltre. These guys, during the season, had this dude's back 100% and never let him go somewhere without having somebody within the watchful eyes making sure that his back is protected. And in the off season, when he wasn't with his wife, there is always somebody from the team that was there to make sure that he stayed out of harm's way. And that was exactly why Josh Hamilton was able to thrive in Texas. He reached the highest of highs in Texas because the Texas Rangers enabled him to thrive. And there are certain things that are just go a little bit more important than money. Now, I don't blame him for taking the contract, but what I want to know is, where were the Angels in this situation? Because we're talking about a relapse. So you have to question, A, the agent for giving him bunk advice for taking that contract in the first place, and also the LA Angels, who did not have his best intentions, and also not protecting the investment that they even gave him.
Yeah.
So I question those two things. And Bo, if I was his agent, if I was Josh Hamilton and I was his agent, and they were saying, okay, yeah, well, the Angels are giving you 5 for $25, I think we should take this, I probably would have fired him and said, you know what, listen, man, this is exactly why I'm in this position. The Texas Rangers were the reason why I'm in this position. So, you know, here, this is what I would have done. I would have grabbed Ron Washington, I would have apologized, taken him up to John Dino's office and say, listen, I'm sorry for acting a fool.
Yeah.
But this is the best situation for me and my family, because here's the reasons why, and I'm sorry. And even if I can't get 5 for $125 here in Texas, let's try to work out maybe a 2 or 3 year deal. I can stay in Texas and I can continue to help this team try to win a championship. And maybe that's only $65 million over three.
Mm-hmm.
What's the big $65 million for a guy that's 31 anyways? That is what I like to call market value.
Well, I mean, it really wasn't the per year money that the Rangers weren't comfortable with. It was the years, and this is why.
Right.
You're dealing with a drug addict. He's likely to have relapse. I mean, drug addicts have relapses.
Right.
Let's be honest about that.
Well,
he has injury problems. Okay, there's a reason why Texas didn't do five guaranteed years, and this is why.
The
Angels did, and they didn't give him the support system that he needed.
I will say this, that the drug addicts that know the difference between right and wrong and understand that there is nothing that they would ever compromise to put themselves in harm's way, those are the ones that don't relapse, because they actually take their sobriety very seriously,
right.
And they won't allow that kind of money, as good as it could be. If that money is there, chances are there's going to be some good money out there anyways. That's the difference between a good recovering drug addict and one that literally just took the money.
Yep.
So I will say this: he should have stayed. And we talked about this off air. A little bit, not necessarily in this length, but we talked about this a little bit, and I will say this, and I said, what would it be like if the Rangers, if Josh Hamilton just apologized, where would the Rangers be today? You know, obviously they wouldn't have Prince Fielder, they wouldn't have some of these cast of characters, but I will say this, they still would be a very good baseball team, and you know what, maybe if the structure was there, still there for Josh Hamilton in Texas, I'm not going out of a length here to say that Josh Hamilton wouldn't be where he is today if he was in Texas. I still think he would be productive. Now, would he be what he was back in 2010, 11, 12? Probably not. But would he be this bad as we've been seeing the last 2 years in LA? No, I don't think that's a stretch to sit here and say that, you know, Josh Hamilton would be that bad in Texas. I think the structure is what gave him that calming, that security blanket that enables him to play good baseball.
Hmm. No, I agree with you. I mean, you wouldn't be this bad. I mean, you look at the second half of his last season in Texas back in 2012. You know, the second half of that season, he was starting to do the slide that he's been stuck in ever since. So
I wonder
I don't think we would see the guy that hit four home runs at Camden Yards.
I wonder if that guy, that second half of 2012, was more or less. I wonder if it was a mental thing, because if I recall now, correct me if I'm wrong, that was also around the time where word started leaking that Texas wasn't going to be giving them a huge extension in the offseason. And there was a lot of talk about Josh Hamilton and his representation, and the Texas Rangers were trying to come together, to some type of extension. But word got leaked that Texas was not going to, that Texas wasn't going to be, extending him in the offseason due to, the attitude issues that Josh Hamilton had started to take on. Like, it was him it was all Josh Hamilton that was responsible for the run that Rangers were on. And it wasn't just, all the resources that the Rangers actually did that allowed him to flourish. Josh Hamilton was acting like it was him when it was really the Rangers.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that played into it when basically Josh Hamilton felt like the Rangers slapped him in the face and vice versa. And we come to find out this offseason that when the Angels tried to shop him back to the Rangers, the Rangers basically said, you know what? We've washed our hands.
Of course they have. I mean, the Rangers have moved on. They've moved on even from the World Series teams. I mean, there's really no one left. Elvis Andrus, Neftali Feliz, Adrian Beltre. There's just not many guys left from that World Series team. What you've seen the Rangers do is try and transition from that core to the Joey Gallo core that's coming up.
Right.
And Gonzalez. And that's what they've been transitioning the last couple of years.
You have to. I mean, no team, you can't keep the band together for X amount of years and expect to have the same thing. I mean,
of course.
We saw what happened when the Yankees were doing it from like 96 to 2001. They tried to keep that band together a little bit through the 2000s. And we saw what happens when rosters get old. Eventually you're going to have to reshuffle the deck and just kind of turn the page and try to rebuild another winning contender, which is what John Daniels has been trying to do. He's been using, he's been using youth and also free agency. I think he's done an okay job. The story has yet to be told for the 2015 Texas Rangers, but the point is, Josh Hamilton is, he created his own issues. And I will say this, it was a lack of hindsight. It was getting a little bunk advice from your agent who does not have his best intentions, because if he did, he would say, hey, listen, okay, the money is out there, but we need to start thinking about you. This is about you and your next 3 years. And don't get me wrong, an agent is supposed to get the most for his client, but this is not a normal situation. And here's the thing, Bo, this might sound cold. This might sound very cold-hearted because, again, man, we're talking about a dude who relapsed with cocaine and alcohol.
Right.
But it's on him. This is not really, I hate to say this, it's a little bit on the Angels for not having his back and at least having somebody there, that can watch his back. But this is solely on the shoulders of Josh Hamilton. And I really hate to put salt on an open wound, but trust me when I tell you that this is something that when he's looking back, he should have thought twice. He easily should have thought twice, and he should have been a bigger dude and understood that and apologized to not only to Ron Washington, but also to John Daniels and tried to figure out a way where they can reconcile that relationship before it got to the point where the Rangers basically just said, you know what, you just go do you, we're going to do us, and we will never speak again. It never should have gotten to that point.
I agree with you. I do, but also if you look at the end of that season, like in particular the last game of the year, this is really when the fan base had washed their hands
on
Josh Hamilton, right? The Rangers are clinging to, I think it was a 2-run lead against the A's, winner wins the West, loser goes into the wild card game against the Orioles. Rangers are leading middle innings. He drops an easy pop-up in middle center field.
Right.
Ron Washington confronts him, and he just laughs off Ron Washington. At that point, Rangers fans had enough.
That was it.
Because in a game that big for a team that could have gone into the Division Series and maybe made another run at the World Series, to have the season end that way, especially with a drop. And it wouldn't necessarily be a drop. The drop could be forgiven. It's Oakland. It's middle of the day. It's sunny. That could be forgiven. It's the laughing off your manager in the dugout. That was really when Rangers fans said, no, that's it. I've had enough of this guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, It's sad that it's gotten to this point for Josh Hamilton, and I would probably assume we have now seen the last of Josh Hamilton. Now, granted, the Angels still owe him a whole bunch of money, but I would if you ask me a percentage of when we'll if we'll see Josh Hamilton back in an Angel uniform being a regular player, I would probably cap that at about 20%. I really think that this is basically the end for Josh Hamilton, and it's kind of sad for a guy who was literally one of the best hitters not that long ago in the American League to go from that to what we're seeing now. It's a pretty sad state of affairs. But Bo, let's jump into some injury updates and some news. St. Louis Cardinals as they prepare to again most likely be in the NLCS again. That's just what they do. Adam Wainwright will not pitch in an exhibition game until mid-March area because of an abdominal strain. It's a type of injury that will prevent him from not starting on opening day, April 5th, against the Cubs. Wainwright hurt his abdominal core Monday while putting a 45-pound weight on his on the back rack. He returned to St. Louis for an examination, and the injury is classified as being minor. I understand what the Cardinals are saying, Bo, but this is an abdominal injury, and we saw exactly what happened to Justin Verlander with this quote-unquote minor abdominal injury. It turned into surgery, and we saw last year exactly just how ineffective Justin Verlander was coming off of abdominal surgery. Now, hopefully, this is actually just minor, and his start to the 2015 will only be pushed back about a week into April. So hopefully, it is really just minor. But I got to be honest with you, I don't like these type of injuries when it comes to pitchers because they absolutely have to have their core to get that power. And now we're talking about Adam Wainwright, who Bo has been kind of touched by the injury bug over the last 5 years.
Yep, it is an abdominal, and especially with a pitcher, you talk about the middle of the body is where all the torque goes and the wind up and the delivery. They've got it's not something you could get to the point where I can pitch through it. It has to be completely healed. Otherwise, he's just going to keep aggravating it over and over and over again. So you're looking at this. It may be minor, and that's fine. That's great. But he's still going to miss half of spring training. He's not going to be ready for opening day. Their best-case scenario is, a week into the season, too?
Yeah, about that. Now, hopefully it is just that. And the good news for Cardinal fans out there was that even though that Wainwright has been avoiding running and weightlifting, he was seen on Friday emerging from the clubhouse during a downpour, and he was throwing on flat ground. So at least he's throwing. He's not throwing hard, but at least he's throwing without pain. So I guess that's a very good sign that maybe this thing is not going to be a nagging reoccurring. But you always have to watch out for it, Bo, because again, it's the abdominal area, and just like back injuries, pitchers can't afford to have back injuries or core injuries. And we saw with your guy down in Texas just exactly how. Ask him just exactly how he's doing. Matt Harrison. So anyway, turning the page now, and we're going to go to Chicago. The White Sox, Chris Sale, hurt his foot in a home accident. This wasn't exactly Sammy Sosa sneezing and hurting his back, which was equally as funny, but this is pretty funny when you think about it. He was hurt awkwardly landing, getting out of his truck, most likely carrying groceries or a bag of some sort. So, he has suffered an avulsion fracture to the lateral side of his right foot. It's not considered major, but then again, this is one of those freak injuries that happen. And, of course, he's going to lose at least 3 weeks. So now we're pushing Chris Sale back into the latter parts of March. The preparation time is going to be small. I'm going to sit here and say I don't think he's going to be ready to start the season. I won't say that he's going to start the season on the DL, but I don't think he's going to be able to make the opener of the 2015 season. I'm sure that's going to go to Jeff Samardzija. But, not exactly the type of injury you want to your ace at this point of the season, Bo. Freak injury or not, Chris Sale, you can't have Chris Sale hurt.
No, you can't. You can't. And it seems like lately, maybe like the last couple of years, we've had a lot of these freak accidents.
Yes.
It's one thing, you get hurt on the field. It's the freak stuff. And I don't get it. These players, for whatever reason, are just, they're tripping over their dogs, they're breaking their foot, getting out, carrying groceries, they're stepping on sprinkler heads.
Oh.
I'm not sure what's going on with these these sprinklers, man. It's nothing but freak accidents lately.
Speaking of sprinkler heads, Michael Saunders, who by the way, is probably one of the coolest guys I think I've ever met as far as ball players goes. He's a no-nonsense type of guy. He's also a guy who both cannot stay healthy. Name me the last time where Michael Saunders has been able to stay healthy. I'll give you a hint. Never. Because he always seems to be hurt quite a bit. And this time, you feel bad for the dude because, yeah, he stepped on a sprinkler head. And if I'm the GM, Alex Anthopoulos, of the Toronto Blue Jays, whoever that groundskeeper is, he is automatically fired.
Oh,
automatically.
Yeah.
Your job is to not leave sprinkler heads standing up in the outfield. Your job is to make sure that the grounds are ready to play ball, and those sprinkler heads are submerged underneath the ground. They're not supposed to be sticking up where Michael Saunders can rip his meniscus. Good news is he's not going to be out until the All-Star break. As a matter of fact, surgery went so well that the team doctors are actually looking at a mid-April return, which is absolutely fantastic because they literally could not afford to lose a dude like Michael Saunders, defensively speaking. It's worrisome because yes, he did tear cartilage. That's not good. But at least he's not going to be out for the first half of the season. He can be productive, and hopefully, if all things go as well, everything will be good for Michael, and he's going to be able to actually have a full season ish at least, and come back in mid-April. In the meantime, they did sign Dion Vicieto to a minor league deal, and if he does make the team, it's going to be worth about $2 million. So I guess that's okay. I mean, me personally, I think Dion Vicieto is kind of garbage, but at least, because of the injury, he's got a home in Toronto just for a little bit. But at least it's good news, but I still feel bad, Bo, because this dude is just an injury plague. He's a 15-day DL stint every single year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you see this, honestly, with these guys, the ones that have that injury problem, things happen to them. They don't happen to other players. Who steps on a sprinkler head?
Michael Saunders steps on. And I feel bad because, again, he's a good guy, Bo. He's probably one of the better ball players I had the privileges of covering a couple seasons ago. But let's be perfectly honest. The dude cannot stay healthy, and I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
Because this is what Michael Saunders does. He steps on sprinkler heads.
Uh-huh.
It's funny when you think about it, but it's also sad. But anyways, let's just go ahead and move on. Those were our news and notes, Bo. We got all the injuries. We got all the injury updates out of the way. We got the Josh Hamilton suspension, the immediate suspension out of the way. So let's go ahead and get to our feature conversation today, Bo. And that is, the difference between projected to win your division, and also what does that translate as far as actually being World Series contenders. And of course, Bo, I'm saying this because my Seattle Mariners are projected to win the American League West, and on paper they do look very good, at least enough to win this division, specifically in 2015. Now, there was a little report that came out there from Robinson Cano, who said, listen, when I look at this team on paper, I see a world championship contender. And I'm not just saying that because I'm, being paid $24 million a year. Now, of course, I'm paraphrasing because he would never say something like that. But it's not because he's biased because he's making $24 million. He looks at this and literally sees a team that possibly could win a World Series. Now, I don't know about that, Bo. But then again, here's the deal, though. They are projected to win the division. And last time I checked, once you win a division and you're in the playoffs, you're competing for a World Series. And
yeah.
So we're talking about the Mariners and the phrase winning a World Series. But there's only going to be six teams competing for it this year, and the Mariners are one of them. So I'm going to ask you, what is the gap? What is the gap to say? And, I'll give you a good example. So let's say we were using the Angels last year, who won 98 games, and a lot of people thought that team was going to win a World Series last year, okay? Mm-hmm. The gap between being good enough to win a division versus good enough to win a World Series, what is that gap? Is it the differential between your pitching and your offense? Is it the differential between what your people in this league think about your pitching versus, say, the Tigers' offense? You know what I mean? What is that gap differential between being good enough to get in versus good enough to go all the way?
I think it begins and ends with pitching. And if you look at teams especially the Royals last year, for example, not an overly impressive team, but when you can shorten the game, especially in the postseason, to, five innings,
right,
like they were able to do last year, you can really do a lot of things. It comes down to pitching. which is why, I mean, the Angels, let's be honest, they took advantage of a weak division last year.
Right.
The Rangers were down. The Astros were the Astros. The A's had a horrible second half. You know, if it wasn't, I honestly think, you know, if Texas had stayed healthy, if the A's hadn't collapsed in the second half of the season, there's no way the Angels hit 98 wins.
Right.
I mean, the division alone probably gave them an extra 10. So they go into the playoffs, they had questions in the rotation, they had questions in their bullpen that they still have to this day. It's not a surprise that they were a one and done because they just didn't have that. If you look at teams that are successful, you know, you've got a starter that's going to be able to go 5-6 innings, keep you in the game, maybe give up a run or two if something else, because runs are at a premium in the postseason. They always have been.
Right.
I think it comes down to pitching. Do you have say three starters? Do you have three starters that can go 6 innings, give up 2 runs or less, and hand it off to a bullpen that can shut things down? If you've got those two things, you can win the World Series.
I think the discrepancy is the consistency between your pitching staff and also your offense. We saw why the Royals couldn't win the World Series last year, and they had a very good World Series, but the offense just wasn't as consistent as their pitching staff. And we saw this in the playoffs last year, just exactly if a team can do it just a little bit better than the others, they're going to win those series. We saw last year just how good the Nationals were at one point, but when it came to the playoffs, you can sit there and say that the Giants were hot, but really, were they really hot, or were they just consistent within the scope of how they play baseball? And I think that's key number one, is you can have a wonderful pitching staff, but as we saw with the Royals, if you can't scratch out enough runs and stay consistent with what you're able to do, I don't care how good your pitching is, because eventually you're going to get yourself into a one run game where you can't scratch out that run. You can't do it. And for me, especially in the 2015 season, I'm going to say it. Is there really a team that's really impressive in the East? Are you impressed with the Red Sox?
No,
Are you impressed with the Blue Jays?
No.
Nope. Are you impressed with the Indians? I'm kind of impressed with the Indians,
yeah,
but
sort of.
I'm lukewarm with the Indians. Are you impressed with the Tigers? Because
yeah.
I'm not yet, at least. Yeah. And that's my point. We were talking about, you know, there's discrepancies of winning a division versus being an actual World Series contender. And I will say there's only one team, and I'm not saying this to be biased, although it's going to come off like I'm biased because, well, obviously I'm a Mariner fan. But right now, I don't think there's a team in this league, the American League, that can, you know, and now granted, we're talking about the Mariners, who have been god-awful offensively for the last 5 years, very bad the last 5 years. And now, literally over the last 2 years, they've added Robinson Cano, they've added Nelson, they added a couple of very good on-base pieces. Seth Smith, Justin Ruggiano, and Ricky Weeks, guys that are not going to – those three guys who are not going to necessarily light the world on fire, but these guys are very good on-base guys in their platoon, in their respective platoons.
Mm-hmm.
And what they have done is added balance, and they've added consistency enough to a point where I think you can feel comfortable with the pieces that they had bringing back versus the pieces that they brought in. And now you can kind of look at it and say, okay, well – when you look at comparison to their pitching staff and what they're able to do consistency wise with their pitching, you kind of look at that offense and say, okay, well, yeah, maybe they're not going to light the world on fire, but is it a stretch to say that they might be consistent at scoring 4 runs a game? Yeah, I think you can say that. And if you can say that, that's a winning team right there. That is a division winning team that possibly could even, dare I say, make you feel comfortable picking them to the World Series out of this, especially in what I would classify a down American League?
Well, you know, I want to see this offense and how it's put together. That's the main thing. Because there's no question that the Mariners have enough pitching to do it.
Right.
The question is, what is this offense going to do?
Right.
What is Nelson Cruz going to be able to do at Safeco? You know, that to me is really the only questions I've got about this team. I mean, you look at them on paper, there's out of the American League West, it's the team with the fewest questions. Now, every team has questions.
Right.
Every team. Even the favorites to win the World Series have questions. And that's my questions right there. It's really offensive because, yeah, it's you know, you got Nelson Cruz, you got Cano, that's great. You still need something from the young guys in that order. You need consistency from the young guys in that order because Cano and Cruz can't do it by themselves. The Mariners definitely have the pitching to do it. Do they have the offense? We're going to have to find out. We're going to have to wait till this season starts.
And the thing about this is you're right. I mean, there is, as far as the Mariners go, in the context of the projected division winners and the discrepancy and the gap between good enough to at least get to the, you know, get to the dance versus being able to, you know, to being able to, you know, win the entire, you know, win the entire tournament, you know, the playoff tournament. Seriously, when you think about this, okay, so the Red Sox are projected to win the, you know, to win the East this year by Fangraphs, and Fangraphs, of course, very good. I wouldn't say they're 100% accurate, Bo, but they're more closer to right than wrong. Okay,
right. Mm-hmm.
Nothing is ever going to be for sure, but over the last couple seasons, Fangraphs has been pretty close to right.
Yeah,
the Red Sox come into the season projected to win the East by clearing the Blue Jays by 4 games. Okay,
mm-hmm.
But what's the thing about the Red Sox that a lot of people, you know, are looking at is, okay, number one, you know, offensively, Hanley Ramirez playing left field. A lot of people think that's going to be, you know, the second coming of Manny Ramirez. That's a wait and see for me as well, too. Same with Pablo Sandoval. But it's the pitching staff. They retooled that entire starting rotation. A lot of very good names, a lot of very good pitchers. But then again, we're talking about pitchers that are going from one extreme to Fenway Park, and we've seen some very good pitchers go to Boston, pitch in Fenway Park, and be kind of shaky. So it's wait and see with the Red Sox pitching rotation. We know that the Blue Jays will not be able to pitch, period. I don't care how good their offense is. You and I have said this for the last 3 seasons. Until the Blue Jays actually show us something pitching wise, you can never buy into the Toronto Blue Jays. And I don't care if they're projected to be a fringe wild card team. This is going to be a team who probably will finish 500 but miss the playoffs again, because again, they just can't pitch. The Yankees, again, question marks in the pitching rotation. Tanaka, Pineda, Sabathia. I mean, I like the addition of Nathan Eovaldi. I like Chris Capuano at the back end of the bullpen. You know exactly what they're going to give you, but the big horses at the top of the rotation, two of them have injury issues. Masahiro Tanaka did not have Tommy John surgery. He elected to not have the surgery and give it rest, and so far things are pretty good. But then again, we're talking about a gimpy elbow, and of course Michael Pineda seems to get hurt every single year as well too, and Cece Sabathia is not the same dude that we saw back in 2002, 2003, 2004. He is getting quite old, and we're talking about a guy who has to at least go 500 for this team to be relevant. So none of the top heavies in the East, and of course the Baltimore Orioles, who are projected to finish only 79 wins, most likely, you know, they have exceeded expectations the last 2 seasons. So, you know, you always have to look at the Orioles, because on paper they look like a team that shouldn't compete, but yet they do. But for the most part, the top heavies in this division, a ton of question marks. I don't necessarily know if you could put your stock with any of those teams once they get into the playoffs necessarily exceeding that. In the Central, of course, you have the Indians. And again, as much as I love the Indians pitching staff, Bo, we're talking about an offense that didn't really do anything spectacular in the offseason, you know, brought over Brandon Moss from the Oakland A's in a trade. But for the most part, this is an offense that is going to need a lot of rebound.
Yeah.
They're asking a lot of guys that have to rebound. And are you comfortable putting stock in a team that is asking a lot of its stars to rebound off what was considered an ugly season?
Nope.
It's hard for me to do that. And the Tigers, of course, listen, the top heavies in the Central, the Tigers, yeah. If Justin Verlander is back to what he was, it's a nice 1-2 punch with him and David Price. But not a lot of sizzle at the back end of that rotation. Not a lot of sizzle in that bullpen. You know they're going to crush the ball. The question with the Tigers is, can they pitch? What I'm basically trying to highlight is the top heavies in the American League, the guys that are, you know, the teams that we expect to be competing for division titles. Okay, that's nice, but are they going to have the horses to not only get there but also get you through some grueling five game series and also a 7-game series? And the only team right now in the American League that you can definitively say, okay, well, at least they're going to have enough offense, and you know what you're going to throw at them pitching wise. I think right now, the team that makes me more comfortable, and you highlighted earlier, Bo, the team that gives you the least amount of question marks right now,
yeah,
coming into it, is the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
There's just not. I mean, again, I want to see Nelson Cruz and Sandoval.
Right.
Because he's going to have to adjust. I mean, he's going to have to go up the gaps. He's going to have a high average, because he's not going to be able to slug what he did in Texas and what he did at Camden Yards.
Right.
He's not going to be able to do that at Safeco. So he's going to have to develop essentially that power alley gap. He's got to shoot those gaps. And if he could do that with the rest of the hitters in that order, they're going to be able to plate some runs.
You know,
but the question is, can he do it?
What's kind of funny is you just highlighted something that I think is the most important thing, because a lot of fans get caught up, Bo, in the home run totals. A lot of people
right.
So caught up in the home run totals, and that's not power to me. Power to me is being able to step in the box, recognize your pitch, and potentially, you know, shoot it into the gap, or maybe even hit it over the right field or going the other way. To me, that is power. That is right. You know, that is something that Nelson Cruz has been able to do. And don't get me wrong, yeah, he can strike out too, and he can also go yard. But what I want to see is, you know, if you have a runner on first, I want to see somebody shoot one into the gap, shoot one over the left fielder's head. Not necessarily be a deadpool hitter, but also just use the entire field and use the expansion to it. And I will say that Nelson Cruz has made a habit of doing it. But the one thing that I'm curious to see is exactly just how Safeco Field plays to it. I think he'll be okay career wise at Safeco Field. He's had 204 plate appearances and 50 starts in Safeco Field, 234, 309, 440, 749. Not exactly sterling numbers at Safeco Field. He's had 9 home runs, 19 RBIs at Safeco Field. It looks like, 19 walks to 52 strikeouts. So he's had a little bit of a sample size there in Safeco Field. But then again, you know, he wasn't in a lineup that featured Nelson Cruz and Kyle Seager hitting right behind him. So maybe it's a little bit different of the situation. But, Bo, you know, when I look at the American League, and I'm trying to figure out a team, you know, that could at least rival what the Mariners give you, you would probably think that it could possibly come with inside their own division. Mm-hmm. You know, could it be? I mean, both the A's and the Angels are projected at 84 wins. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's coming from the West. I'm having a hard time identifying a team that is going to give you at least something that's close. That kind of shrinks the discrepancy between pitching and offense. Something that doesn't, that, you know, a team that's not going to have as many question marks. Maybe it's the Indians. Maybe.
No, I mean, the entire American League is filled with question marks. I mean, it really is. So I'm not sure. I mean, American League, I mean, it's a very winnable league. You know, I think it's a little bit like last year where the Royals were able to win. I mean, look at like the ALCS last year. It was the O's and the Royals.
And the Royals, right.
Who saw that coming in March last year? I didn't.
Yeah,
who saw the O's winning the East by, 8 games?
Yeah, I kind of saw that. I have not liked the East in the American League for the last 3 seasons. So yeah, I would say that I saw the Orioles winning it, maybe not by as wide as I did, but I still saw them winning the East. But as far as being in the playoffs, you know, I would say nobody saw that the Royals sweeping the Angels right out of the playoffs and then doing what they did. It was a very good year for small market teams. But let me ask you this question: Is this year's winner coming out of the National League? Are we going to be seeing a National League World Series champion again? Because to me, it really kind of feels that way, doesn't it? I mean, when you look at the top heavies in the American League, okay, that's, you know, it looks okay. But when you look at the top heavies in the National League and you see the Nationals, who have been very good, and of course Max Scherzer comes over. Really solidifies that team. I mean, even the most arrogant SOB, Bryce Harper, comes out and basically says, okay, like, where's my ring? By the way, I have a different issue with that, but that dude just needs to shut the hell up. But listen.
Yeah, exactly.
But the Nationals are a very good team. I'm not necessarily sold on their offense, but then again, it's still going to be a decent enough offense where that pitching is going to keep them in a lot of games. And then, of course, you have the consistent St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah.
Who seem to be in the NLCS every single year, and of course you have the Dodgers and the Giants, who have the rings. The Dodgers have all the high priced talent. They seem to be in the playoffs every single year as well too. So you look at just the consistency the National League offers versus the question marks of the American League. I can't help but think, Bo, this is probably going to be a National League, another National League World Series.
It might be. You know, I think like the American League is essentially, I mean, we could probably identify maybe 6-7 teams that could be in the running. The National League, it's going to be just like it was last year. It's going to be the same teams.
I will say but there are a few more teams in the National League that are going to have intrigue this year. The Marlins are going to be a very intriguing team to watch. I thought the Marlins had a very good under-the-radar offseason. I think the Mets could possibly be a little bit better than they were. I do. I really like the Mets pitching staff. I'm not necessarily sold on their offense, but the Pirates should be exactly where they were. The Cubs should be a lot better this year. As a matter of fact, Fangraphs has the Cubs projected at 84 wins, right on the outside looking in, and we're talking about a team that has been just absolutely god-awful the last 3 to 4 seasons. From them going from 90 losses to 84 wins, that's actually a nice little turnaround for the Cubbies out there. And, of course, the Giants, You know, we saw what the Giants were able to do last year as a second wild card, and of course the Padres got a little bit better. So there's going to be you know, there's going to be some other teams in the mix, but the top heavies in the National League are exactly what you expect them to be: Nationals, Cardinals, Dodgers.
Right.
Yeah. No
Giants. Don't forget the Giants.
Right. But for the most part, there's not a lot of instability with the National League top.
What do you
usually expect from the American League? You expect Red Sox, Yankees, Tigers, and the Angels in the West. Those are the four teams you expect to see year in and year out, consistency wise. And
we're talking a
shaky Red Sox team, the Indians and the Mariners.
Yeah. Very, very possible.
I mean,
and then you look at the wild card. You know, the wild card could come out of the West because
right.
I think the Central is going to be awful. I think that the East is going to be not necessarily awful, but bad.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's conceivable that you look at the American League West. You got Seattle, okay. If the Rangers are healthy, they're going to be in it. Maybe. If all these kids and all these moves that Billy Beane made, if they hit, maybe the A's, maybe the Angels. I mean, you could conceivably see two or three teams coming out of the American League West into the playoffs.
I would not be surprised.
Let's look at this, okay? Let's say Seattle wins the West.
Okay.
You got the Rangers, the A's, the Angels. That's three teams that should at least be at 500 or better. Now, match them up against the rest of the American League. Are they better than the White Sox? I think so. Are they better than the Tigers? Yes. Are they better than, say, the Blue Jays? Better than the Rays? Better than the Yankees? It's conceivable that you're going to have a wild card playing game that's got two West teams in it.
Right. Right. Sorry about that. Little technical difficulties on this part. But I will say I would not be surprised if both wild card teams came out of the West, because again, we're talking about the discrepancy, the gaps between offense and defense, and the teams that look like to be complete teams. I would probably say that the best division in baseball is probably the American League West. Probably the American League West. And what's kind of funny is I'm actually sold on the Oakland A's. I'm very sold on the Oakland A's. It's weird because when you look at this and you say, okay, well, a team that loses five All Stars, you know, in one off season, the chances are that team is not going to be competitive. But just look at this team from top to bottom; it's still the same core as we saw last year, and maybe in certain areas got a little bit better. And you know, once they get Jared Parker back, and once they get some of these other guys coming back off the DL, that pitching staff is good. It will be even better once those two come back in the fold.
Right.
The A's are projected right now at 84 wins. That could be a little bit higher. Not maybe by much, but just a little bit higher. And, of course, the Angels, it's going to be interesting to see what the Angels are going to be able to do pitching-wise. But for the most part, I wouldn't be surprised if the American League West had both wildcard participants. And it would be interesting to see keeping an eye on your Texas Rangers as well, too, because, again, if that team is healthy, I mean 100% healthy, and they get good performances out of that rotation, decent performance. I'm not talking like off the charts, you know, performances out from the Rangers, but at least decent enough. Their projected 77 wins could possibly point that needle north into the 81 to 84 win threshold. And now all of a sudden you're talking about the Rangers sneaking into a wild card berth as well too. They still have the talent to get it done. It's for me, the Rangers are all about wait and see. But then again, we're still talking about. But again, it's a division of four teams. It's a four team race in this division. Whereas
right.
You look at the East and you're kind of like the Red Sox, okay, maybe if things break right. The Blue Jays, okay, again, if they can pitch. The Yankees, same thing. It's question mark on the East. In the Central, it's like the Indians on paper look like they're the best team, but then that whole thing is also a question mark as well, too. You got the White Sox, who had a very good offseason, but they're the White Sox, and they make choking an art form. And then, of course, you have the Royals, who had a very good season. You have the Tigers. I mean, you have some intrigue in the Central, but for the most part, you know what you're getting out of the American League West. You're getting at least four teams that could potentially play incredibly good baseball. And it's going to be like how the NFC East used to be in football, where they beat each other to a pulp, and it's whoever's going to be able to take advantage of the rest of the league is going to win that division.
Let me ask you this, okay? Let's talk about the Angels for a second here, because this is something that I've been thinking about. Really, ever since this Josh Hamilton thing came down, okay? the last couple of years, what have we been talking about with the Angels? We're like, okay, their bullpen is horrible. Back into the rotation has issues. That's what we've been talking about. We haven't been talking about their offense. Should Angels fans now be more concerned about their offense and their pitching? Because you lose Josh Hamilton for who knows how long. He's going to be out to at least May anyway with that shoulder. No telling how long he's going to be out. And even when he's back, he's just not what he used to be. Pujols is another year older. He's declining. They traded Howie Kendrick. Where's their offense coming from?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that again? I'm sorry, bud.
No worries. No worries. We've always been focusing on the Angels pitching.
Right.
Back in the rotation's bad. Bullpen's bad. But look at their offense now. Without Josh Hamilton for who knows how long.
Even
with Josh Hamilton, okay. Pujols is another year older. He's declining. They traded Howie Kendrick.
Right.
All they really have is Mike Trout now all of a sudden. I mean, should Angels fans be more concerned about their offense now than their pitching, which is a complete flip the last couple of years?
I will say that, Cole Calhoun has quietly turned himself into a nice little piece. I really do like Cole Calhoun. But for the most part, they also got brought over Matt Joyce, who's very good in a platoon situation. But again, we're talking about a platoon bat. But for the most part, you're right. It's just Mike Trout, and that's fantastic. Mike Trout is one heck of a player. But you're absolutely right. They traded Howie Kendrick to free up $9 million to make a run at one of the big name pitchers out there. It didn't come to fruition, and so now they're left with Josh Rutledge, who was brought over from the Colorado Rockies. He's 25 years old, serviceable enough defensively at second base, but for the most part, it's Josh Rutledge. It's exactly what you think it is. And for the most part, this is a lineup that, yeah, you're absolutely right. Now they don't have Josh Hamilton. He's out of the fray. He's going to be suspended either 25 games or even up to a year. So you can't necessarily really count on wondering whether or not Josh Hamilton is going to be a comeback player of the year. So, yeah, you're right. It's Albert Pujols, who's 35.
Yeah, another year older.
This is not Albert Pujols 5 years ago when he had the three home run game in the World Series against the Rangers. Again, I'm not trying to stir the pot with you, but we saw
that game. That was awesome.
We know what Albert Pujols used to do, and sometimes in clips what he can bring to the table. But this is a guy who's 35 and is not getting any younger. And we even saw over the last 2 years, even as good as he was at the beginning of last season, we've seen Albert Pujols, the decline of Albert Pujols, which it is what it is. I mean, he's getting older. It is what it is. But for the most part, we've seen it, and you're absolutely right. This is a middle of the order that's going to feature. This is your 3, 4, 5, and 6, okay? 3, 4, 5, and 6. Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, Matt Joyce, David Freese.
Ugh.
Right? Your bench.
This is your bench.
This is very underwhelming.
If
the season started today and it broke right, here's your bench: Drew Butera, Taylor Featherston, Grant Green, Colin Cowgill. That's your bench.
I like Calgill, but that's about it.
Right. So this is exactly. So it's a little bit of a scare if you're an Angels fan, because right now this does not really look all that good. Which
also compounds the pitching problem, because they still have issues with the back end rotation. They still have holes in the bullpen.
But just like the A's, I mean, Tyler Skaggs probably is not going to be back. Tommy John's surgery last August, you're probably not going to get him back until the All-Star break or at the earliest. You might not even have him this entire season. But Garrett Richards should be ready to go at some point this season. So once you get Garrett Richards back, that's going to help a little bit. But right now, your projected rotation is Jared Weaver, not an ace. C.J. Wilson, not a number two. Matt Shoemaker, who I like. Hector Santiago, eh. And then Andrew Heaney. You have no idea exactly how Andrew Heaney is going to play out. I mean, he was at one point, the Dodgers' number one pitching prospect. They get him a trade with Howie Kendrick. So, I mean, Andrew Heaney is okay, but again, it's a wait and see with Andrew Heaney. And then their bullpen, give DePoto credit, because this was the worst bullpen possibly in the face of the American League. And now it's actually a pretty decent bullpen. Houston Street, mm-hmm. Joe Smith, Fernando Salas, Michael Morin, Vinny Pastano, that's actually not a bad bullpen. At least they have a serviceable bullpen. At least that's something you can hang your hat on. But again, you have Jerry Weaver, who's probably a number two. C.J. Wilson, who's probably a number four at this point. Matt Shoemaker, who is, 28. And, I like to call Matt Shoemaker, the Paul Abbott of the Angels, Angels rotation, where you can have a good season with Paul Abbott. But for the most part, he's old. He's an older type of dude. He's Granted, he's 28, so he should be in the middle of his prime, but for the most part, you know exactly what you're going to get with Matt Shoemaker. And Hector
sure.
Santiago, who's 27, you know, he is what he is. He is exactly what he is. You know, he's a guy who can have a couple good starts, but you're never going to consider him a guy who can string together consecutive really good starts. But for the most part, yeah, this is an Angels team. When you break it down to all different sides, this is a team that potentially could have a very bad season, very, very bad season. And to compound things, you know, you have to have this rotation to carry you. This is what's going to make or break the Angels this year, is that rotation.
If the Angels
get good, solid starting pitching and Garrett Richards comes back and he is exactly who you thought he is, and maybe you get Skaggs at the end of the season, you know, maybe that's going to keep him in it. But for the most part, this offense has the potential to be not that good of an offense, especially after four. After Pujols, you have Joyce Freeze, CJ Cron, Josh Rutherlis, Chris Iannetta. That looks horrible. Compared to, it's kind of funny. Like, it's I hate to get into a game of take your pick, because I'd rather just not. But think of it this way: if you're asking me to take my pick, and you're saying, okay, cool, now here's the Rangers this is the Rangers now, three through six, Prince Fielder, Adrian Beltre, Mitch Moreland, Josh Smolinski, and it as of right now. It could be a little bit, maybe it's a little bit something like this. Maybe
swap out Rua there for Smolinski.
Yeah, whatever. You get or maybe even Nate Scherholz has a good, I don't know. You know what I mean? It's like whatever. Left field.
Ludwig.
Right.
Like 12 guys in competition for left field.
Right, but you get my point. Okay, so you have your 3-5. How about your 1-5? Chu, Andres, Fielder, Beltre, Moreland. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's consistent. Now take your pick. Now here's your rotation. Darvish, Holland, Gallardo, Lewis, Detweiler. Yeah, I think I probably would take that too.
Yeah.
So if you're asking,
solid
like,
rotation.
Now here's the deal. I mean, it's again, we were talking about the Rangers. It's a wait and see, and of course, it's a wait and see because of so many injuries last season. But for the most, if you're asking me to take my pick, I'll probably take the Rangers before I take the Angels.
Of course.
We're talking about an Angels team that's projected to win 84, and a Rangers team that's only projected to win 77.
Right.
And clearly, we've shown you the heart of the order. We've shown you the rotation. And again, I'm not necessarily sold on the Rangers, but as of right now, if you ask me to take my pick, especially in this division, the confines of the West, I'll even give you another one. Take your pick. And I didn't want to get into this, but yeah, take your pick. We'll play it. How about this? Okay, you know it's going to be. It's going to be what? It's going to be Trout, Pujols. It's going to be Matt Joyce, and I think it was David Freeze. Take your pick. 3-6. George Springer, Chris Carter, Colby Rasmus, Evan Gattis. Excuse me. George Springer, Jason Castro, Chris Carter, Colby Rasmus, Evan Gattis. Take your pick.
Well, I'm definitely going with the second one.
Yeah, you're going to take the Astros. It's funny. What do you think about this? Is look at how much drop off the Angels had last year versus this year, and look at the way that the Astros improved. Look at the way that the Texas Rangers look on paper coming back from injury. Look at the Mariners' heart of the order. Even look at the A's. And this is kind of funny, but think about this. Look at the A's, and we're talking about a team that potentially could finish in last place. Excuse me. We're talking about how the confines of this division is going to go, and we're talking about who could possibly finish in last place. Then you have Josh Reddick, Billy Butler, Ike Davis, Brett Lowry.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong; it's not sexy, but it's definitely not horrible.
It's certainly better. I mean, I think look at this. You know, this is why I like when we break things down like this, because then you get a different perspective.
Right. It's kind of funny because
you can make the argument that the Angels are going to finish last.
Yeah, the wheels start turning. You're kind of like, well, what happens if Pujols isn't Pujols and all you do have is Cole Calhoun and Mike Trout? I'm not a big David Freeze guy. It's kind of funny. It's like when you kind of look at the confines and the context of this division. I mean, I can go through every team in the Central. I probably can give you a better middle of the order than what the Angels are about to put out.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Orioles, and what's kind of funny is I hate the Orioles lineup, but I think I would take them. I easily would take the Red Sox. I would even take the Yankees. You're definitely going to take the Blue Jays, maybe even the Rays. It's kind of funny. Is you would probably take, I can give you a team right now, okay? And I think you might take them over the Angels. Listen to this. Would you take, maybe not this one, but maybe you would. I don't know. Lorenzo Cain, Alex Gordon, Lorenzo Cain, Eric Hosmer, Sal Perez, Kendry Morales, Alex Rios.
I definitely take that over the Angels.
Maybe I wouldn't. I'm not a huge Eric Hosmer guy, and depending on the context of Kendrys Morales, I probably wouldn't take him either. So maybe I just might be inclined to take the Angels over the Royals, but that's the middle of the order for the Royals.
Yeah. Is there a lineup that even with, let's say Pujols has a little bit of a rebound year. Let's say he hits 280, 25 bombs.
Okay.
Even with that production, is there a lineup in the American League that's worse than that?
Than the Angels?
Think about it.
All right. How about this one? Give me a second. I think I got this one for you, Bo.
I'm all ears.
What's a worse lineup than the Angels? How about this? Brian Dozier, Joe Mauer, Kenny Vargas, Torii Hunter, Trevor Plouffe.
Okay, yeah, that is worse.
That's pretty bad. That's what the Minnesota Twins are rolling out there. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, if Brian Dozier is Brian Dozier and Joe Mauer can get back to what you expect Joe Mauer to be, that's a good little 2-3, but for the most part, that is a horrible lineup in Minnesota. So I think I would probably take...
That's worse.
How about this one? Would you take this one in the American League? Would you take Evan Longoria, James Loney, Steven Souza, Kevin Kiermaier? I wouldn't take that either. I would probably take the Angels too.
That's essentially the same problem that the Angels have, is you're putting all of it on Longoria.
Right. And it's a lot of sizzle in one spot, not much. How about this one? Would you take Christian Yelich, Giancarlo Stanton, Mike Morse, Martin Prado?
Yeah,
I would absolutely. That's kind of one of the reasons why I like the fish in the National League this year.
Division, yeah.
It doesn't really matter about the division. We're talking about we expect the Nationals to be there, but for the context of the wild card, that's a very good team. Except I hate Matt Latos, but that's a different story for a different day. I mean, we've just highlighted the discrepancies from an American League West standpoint, but also from the rest of the American League. I mean, you look at some of these teams versus the National League counterparts. The American League, you see a lot of holes in the American League, lot of holes. It makes you wonder how the balance of power shifted from the American League to the National League. But then again, as far as the context of the prospect game as well too, which comes into huge conversation. This conversation, are the National League teams doing a little bit better than the American League teams? Because you see a lot of consistency in the National League, and you see some teams that are doing it pretty well in the American League. But for the most part, we just highlighted teams. You can go through them. Check, Bo, and you're kind of like, okay, well, yeah, we just saw Mike Trout is good, but there's very little behind him. You know, you see that Brian Dozier can be good, but the Minnesota Twins are god awful.
Yeah, they are.
You know what I mean? It's kind of funny. Go through every single team in the American League. You're like, okay, that's cool. You don't see a team that's going to be like, oh, okay, cool. From 2 through 6, you're like, oh, that's going to be dangerous. The Texas Rangers look like they could.
Mm-hmm.
Austin Jackson, Seth Smith, Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, Kyle Seager, Logan Morrison. That's pretty good. That's pretty good-ish. That's not great, but it's not bad. I mean, you have two guys, Cano and Cruz, that can, and now Seager that can do it. But for the most part, it's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad.
No.
And you look at this, the Orioles, The Orioles,
The Orioles always seem to come up with pitching, like we talked a couple weeks ago. I don't know where they get it.
It's like the teams it's kind of funny because you look at it on paper, Machado, Jones, Davis, Pierce, Snyder. That looks
kind of bad.
That looks horrible. Machado, if he can stay healthy, and Adam Jones, I really like Adam Jones, but for the most part, Chris Davis, 29 years old, has, I believe, had the best years already behind him, and you have Steve Pierce and Travis Snyder behind him.
I like Pierce.
Anyways, but you get my point. It's like, okay, cool. And then you look at the Red Sox, and you're like, okay, that's pretty cool, too. You're like, okay, Pedroia, Ortiz, Ramirez, Sandoval, Napoli, with Victorino at the top, that looks like a pretty good lineup, or it has the potential to be a very good lineup. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the rotation, and you're like, okay, Porcello, Miley, Masterson, Buchholz, Kelly, you're like, where's the ace of the staff? You know, like, you look at a glutton of number three guys. It's like, okay, cool. You see something very good, and then you see the drop off. Mm-hmm. You see the drop off, and that's the entire American League East. That's the entire American League Central. And then you get into the West, and you're like, wow, it's kind of funny when you look at it. This has the potential to be a very good division if the Angels are finishing in last.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It could happen.
It could happen. I hope it happens.
Oh, so do I. But you look at the Astros. Can they? I mean, like, they've obviously improved their lineup, but can they pitch? We got Scott Feldman starting opening day for you. That's bad.
Ooh, but it's the Astros, though. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny is when you think about it, though. At the other end of the scale, though, their rotation's actually not bad. When you think about behind Feldman, you have Keuchel, McHugh, Overholtzer, and Straley. That's actually not terrible. It's
not terrible.
You have you basically have a rotation that's consistently a whole bunch of two, like on the top end, a two. And then a whole bunch of threes and fours, but they don't have a rotation that's like consistently fives. You know what I mean? Like, you can't have a rotation with fours and fives and expect to win. But you do, if you have a collection of, like, at the top and maybe a two, and the majority of them are threes, that's okay. What concerns me with the Astros is their bullpen. They got better, but that was a pretty bad bullpen last year. But my point is, at the end of the day, you might have more consistency. But the discrepancy in the National League, but the discrepancy between pitching and offense, I think, four teams in the American League, it resides there.
Mm-hmm.
In the American League West, excuse me. I think it resides there.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. That's kind of funny.
No question.
And it's kind of funny as I hate to toot your Rangers horn, but, you know, kind of going back over the Rangers again, I'm kind of looking at it thinking to myself, man, if this team stays healthy – I'm not a big fan of their bench at all, but for the most part, if this team stays healthy.
Well, the bench is better than it's been the last couple of years. Sean Dano's really done a better job this year. It's still not great, but it's better.
Carlos Corcoran, Aldin Rosales, Kyle Blanks, and Nate Scherholz. I like Scherholz, but not Kyle Blanks or Aldin Rosales, but whatever.
This team is really, it's difficult to project this team. Because I think that, you know, if Prince is back to being Prince and he can hit 25, 30 home runs, if Chu's healthy and he's back and Martin can build on what he did last. I mean, this is a lineup that has potential. This team has potential, but it also has potential to be bad. Okay? If everything goes right, they can win 95 games. If everything goes wrong, they're going to be where Fangraphs has them projected, 75, 77 wins. You just don't know. You have to get in the season.
In other news,
you have to see what you're getting from Prince and Chu.
In other news around the league, Jose Fernandez has his first bullpen session since Tommy John surgery. Very good to see. I have no idea what the timetable is for Jose Fernandez. Last time I checked, they were talking about possibly having him ready to go for the start of the season. That would be definitely a coup for the Marlins, but for the most part, well, let's see. He had the Tommy John surgery in May, on May 16th of last season. So yeah, he's actually right there at the timetable. And if the fish can get Jose Fernandez back into the rotation, and let's say Bo, they got him for at least 20 starts this upcoming season, maybe a little bit more than 20 starts. They limit his innings, and they make sure that his mechanics is pretty good. I'm telling you, man, with Jose Fernandez into that rotation, they added Dan Heron. They added Matt Latos. They added Jared Cosart last year in a trade.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. Listen, the Nationals obviously have a pretty good rotation. There's no doubt about it. But if you're going to have a rotation of Jose Fernandez, Matt Latos, Henderson Alvarez, Dan Heron, like Dan Heron possibly could be your number five, which is what he should be at this point anyways, but your rotation is going to be Fernandez, Latos, Cosart, Henderson Alvarez, Dan Heron. That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
Like the fish have a good team.
They have a good team. Definitely going to be a wild card contender. I don't know if they're going to be able to keep up with the Nats. The Nationals, though, you know, they do have questions with the offense. and they've got questions in the back end of that bullpen. That's their question marks. They've got the super rotation, but everything else, I'm going to say it.
This is exactly what I'm going to say. It's nice when you can get Max Scherzer. You spent a whole bunch of money on Max Scherzer. That's nice. But you know what, though? They needed to do a little bit something more in their offense, and they didn't need to go out and get Max Scherzer. It was nice to have Max Scherzer. And, of course, you have to think about in the context of not just this year, but in the upcoming years when you're going to potentially lose Jordan Zinnerman and lose Doug Fister. You have to, you know, and then you have Strasburg coming up, and just, you know, I think it would, at the end of next year, Strasburg is going to be coming up. So, you know, you have to think a little bit long term. So, I mean, at least you have Scherzer in place. But for the confines, you know, from the contents of this season, they didn't need Max Scherzer, and you what they needed? They needed a first baseman, because they let LaRoche go, and they're moving an oft-injured Ryan Zimmerman to first base.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, I look at this offense and I see Denard Span, who I like, Anthony Rendon, Bryce Harper, Ryan Zimmerman, Ian Desmond, Wilson Ramos, Yuniel Escobar, and Michael Taylor.
Yeah.
That looks horrible. The pitching. But I don't really like the – what's kind of funny, and then when you look at this, and I'm making my case. Now, I know what you're going to say. Yeah, I know what you're going to say. You know, you're going to say Strasburg, Scherzer, Zimmerman, Gonzalez, Fister, checkmate. I get it, okay? That rotation's pretty good. Their bullpen's pretty good. But versus this, and all of a sudden now my computer's not working. Okay, well, anyways, versus D. Gordon, Kristen Yelich, Giancarlo Stanton, Mike Morris. Oh man, why isn't this not loading? It always happens. It just, for whatever reason, you just hear it. Here we go, and now it's loading. Disco. Martin Prado, Marcelo Zunas, Jared Saltalamacchia, Andy Hechevarria, and their bench now includes Ichiro Suzuki, who is actually going to be benefit by playing off the bench, not playing every single day. That actually could be a pretty good pickup when you consider pinch hitting duties, and then also being able to come onto the field once, twice a week. That was a very good pickup for them as well too. And then you look at the rotation, especially when Jose Fernandez comes back, and then you look at the back end of that bullpen. I can possibly make a case if the Marlins stay healthy and they can stay consistent. The Marlins could possibly push this division when a lot of people think this thing is going to be won by 10 games by the Nationals.
Mm-hmm.
I actually can make a case that the Fish might even push this division.
They might. I mean, look at the rest of the division, okay? The Braves dealt away pretty much everybody.
The Phillies are garbage, no.
The Phillies are garbage. The Mets might sniff 500, maybe.
I think the Mets can do a little bit better. Now, I will say this. Juan Lagares, Daniel Murphy, David Wright, Lucas Duda, Michael Kadire, Curtis Granderson, Travis d'Arnaud, Wilmer Flores. I don't like the lineup. I really don't, because Lagares is not that great of a hitter. Great defender, not that great of a hitter. And then you have your heart of your order is Wright, Duda, Kadire, Granderson. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly the greatest bench either, but you look at their pitching staff, and this is something that I like. Matt Harvey, Bartolo Colon, John Neese, Zach Wheeler, Jake DeGrom, and then their bullpen is, you know, Henry Mejia, Yoris Familia, Vic Black, Josh Edgen. I really like that bullpen, and I like that rotation. That's the whole thing, is I think the top heavies in this division can pitch the lights out. I think, you know, if you're asking me what's going to be the key to this division, it's going to be who can give you the consistent offense. Right, I think. Wouldn't you think in this one? I mean, you know that all three of these teams can pitch, but which one of you is going to give you consistent enough pitching? That's the Nationals. You know that,
right?
Who's going to give you the most consistent offense in this one? And I actually probably say
Marlins.
The Fish.
Yeah,
right. So who's going to be able to do it consistently enough from both sides? And that's what we don't know yet. And I know you're going to say, if the Nationals can just give you three to four, that's your division winner.
No, I think they may need to do a little more than that, because I really just do not like some of the pieces in that bullpen.
Fangraphs thinks that the division is going to be won by 10. There's going to be a 10-win gap between the Nationals and the Marlins, and I don't see it that way.
I think it's going to be a lot closer than 10 games. You know, I think, projecting out, it really looks like the Marlins are going to at least be in that wild card game, I would suggest, and they're probably going to be within 10 games of the Nationals. I mean, the Nationals, be honest, I mean, it's a super rotation. It's a very good rotation. By far the best in baseball. They're going to be without Wirth for, what, the first month?
Pretty much, yeah.
worth without, you know, without him for the first month. Bryce Harper has had a bad stretch really the last year and a half. Where's their offense going to come from? I don't care how good your pitching is, you still have to score runs. I mean, how many times have we seen Oakland A's teams that lose 2-1?
Right.
Okay.
You've got to score runs at some point, yeah.
You've got to score runs, and that's the concern with the Nationals. I don't know where they're going to get their runs. I have concerns on the back end of that bullpen. I think that, you know, maybe it's going for Scherzer. They should have gone for Miller in the bullpen. They should have gone for another bat, maybe
right.
Nelson Cruz. Okay. Maybe they should have done that instead of Scherzer, but this is what they've done. They went for super rotation. They got it, but it's not going to be so dominant that you can just write off everybody else.
We saw this last year in the playoffs, especially in that divisional series versus the San Francisco Giants. Listen, nobody's going to sit here and say that the Giants are world beaters. Okay, I mean last year's Giants lineup wasn't exactly the greatest lineup ever assembled, but you know what though, their pitching was good enough to counter exactly what Washington was able to throw out there, and they were able to get it done. This is going to be alarming because a lot of people think this is going to be World Series or bust. I think that's an undue needed expectation for the Washington Nationals. And I think they're going to get in. I think they're going to win this division, but I don't have the Washington Nationals winning the World Series this year. As a matter of fact, I don't think they snipped the World Series this year. And it wouldn't surprise me if they got bounced out again in the divisional, just because I'm just. Injuries, attrition will always take its course during the regular season, Bo. And when I look at this National League, it wouldn't surprise me if one of those wild card teams bounces them out in the divisional, or even a matchup where you're going to go up against the Dodgers or whoever's
right.
going to win the West, and that, you know, they could end up bouncing them out. And of course, you know, if it's the Dodgers, then Clayton Kershaw's got to get over whatever he's got to get over in the playoffs. But you get my point. I just don't see the Nationals winning the World Series this year. Let's get to a new segment that I like to call Will They or Won't They, Bo? And it's going to be six players who possibly could be traded between now and the start of the regular season, Bo. So will they or won't they? First up, Cliff Lee. Last year it was kind of up and down. He had a little slow start. He has to show he can overcome some, you know, that the elbow injury that limited him to the 13 starts. But then again, this is a Phillies team that is clearly rebuilding. Their Phillies GM, Ruin Tomorrow's future, has teamed up with former Phillies GM, former Mariners GM, and consultant Pat Gillick to try to turn this thing around. But Cliff Lee, age 36, could be likely dealt before Cole Hamels. But both are obviously part of trade rumors. He's 36, has to show teams that he's overcome it. But then again, he can give you when 100% healthy, and it's not like 36 is not going to be, he's not going to be able to give you anything, especially if you're a team that's on the brink of getting into the playoffs. You know about his playoff history. So
right.
Though, will he or won't he be dealt?
I don't think so.
Start of the regular season, by the way.
I don't think so because, one, I mean, teams probably need more than just a few spring starts to really see that elbow and make sure it's healthy. But more importantly, it's Ruben Amaro Jr.
Ruin Tomorrow's future.
I mean, no, it's Ruben Amaro Jr.
Ruin Tomorrow's
future. I got you. That's real. Yeah, come on, you're talking about the worst GM in baseball. He wants the King's ransom for
Papelbon.
Papelbon,
yeah.
If you're going to demand that much for Papelbon, what are you going to demand for Cliff Lee? And you're not going to get it. He's asking for, what, four top ten prospects for Cole Hamels? No team's going to do that.
Nope.
If you want to rebuild, you rebuild.
Right, right.
But you're not going to do it with demands this high. No,
you might be able to get two. You might be able to get to a mid-range prospect and then maybe somebody off the
– A-ball throw-in.
But maybe somebody off your 25-man roster spots, 23 through 25, but you're not going to be able to get four top prospects and then somebody off your 25. That's not going to work. The other guy that's in Philly's camp that is a part of this will he or won't be is actually Jonathan Papelbon, who we just mentioned, age 34. And, again, the Phillies, the Phillies are rebuilding and have no need for Jonathan Papelbon this season. Now, again, last 2014, Papelbon had a very good stretch. I think it was, 36 appearances with only allowing, like, two earned runs, something crazy like that. And don't get me wrong, his velocity has dipped since what we saw him back in Boston. It's now in the 90 to 92, but he still has an assortment. He has an assortment of three different pitches. He's got the four-seamer, got the cutter, got the split. He's still pretty good. The only problem is, Bo, he's making $13 million this year, and he's got a vesting option for 2016, which basically means this is a huge commitment. This doesn't come with a huge commitment, but it does because, again, it's 13, and he's got a vesting option. And if you're a team trading for him, you're probably gonna trade for him with the eye of taking that vesting option, which means you're taking a huge 2-year commitment. But then again, you're getting a very good closer. So this, to me, I think this is more likely he'll get dealt than say like Cole Hamels or Cliff Lee, which probably won't happen until either the deadline or this upcoming offseason. But Papelbon is a little bit better of a candidate. But Bo, will he or won't he be dealt before the start of the regular season?
I think it's possible. I don't think that the Phillies will be moving any guys during spring training. But if, you know, let's say a contending team, one of their bullpen guys goes down, Papelbon becomes an option.
Right.
You know, if a team, say, you know, the guy that they're looking at to take the closer's job, I mean, I'll even throw the Raiders out there. Let's say you have probably Feliz struggles in spring training, and the Rangers are looking for a closer. They don't want Shep to do it. They may make the deal with Pat for Papelbon.
Right.
You know, it's possible. So if you got a team's plan closer that has a bad spring, could happen. An injury could make that happen. But unless something like that happens, I don't see that. I don't see this trade happening.
Right. I don't. I do, and I think maybe, you know, there was a lot of rumor between with Papelbon going to the Brewers.
Right.
But then again, they just got K-Rod for, I think it was like $2 million, a lot better deal for the Brewers. But then again, there's still some innuendo out there, you know, that Papelbon possibly could. I still don't see it. I see it more likely than a guy like Cliff Lee or even Cole Hamels, because, you can figure out a way to get that contract moved. But the problem is, again, we've highlighted Ruben Amaro Jr., the fact that he asked for entirely way too much when you actually shouldn't ask for way too much. And I think that's going to be a problem. The other guy that checks on in this list comes from the New York Mets, and that's Dylan G, age 28, right at the start of what is considered the prime between age 30 at 28 and 32. And what I will say is I like Dylan G. He really is an effective starting pitcher, and throughout his career he's been a far better option than what most teams can throw out there, especially from three and four. And we're also remembering that this is a very pitching-rich Mets organization, and the reason why he checks in on this list is because, well, let's call it what it is. Okay, the Mets have holes in this lineup right now, most notably at shortstop, where right now Wilmer Flores is projected to be their starting shortstop. And if you can tell me who Wilmer Flores is, Bo, that's a problem. Also, you would also have to think that maybe center field could use a little bit of an upgrade. I'd rather have Juan Lagares as my fourth outfielder because he can play all the positions in the outfield. He's tailor made for a very good, very good fourth outfielder. Like we've highlighted with Juan Lagares, he's a very good defensive center field, probably one of the better defensive center fields out there. Just really can't hit a ton. And we're talking about a Mets team that's trying to tread water to their pitching staff. We talked about this all show long, the discrepancy between offense and defense. This is exactly why he's on this list. And Bo, for a team like Seattle that has two very good shortstops, and depending on how things play out and the roster construction between the Seattle Mariners, whether they're going to keep an 8-man bullpen, 7-man bullpen, can very well play into maybe the Mariners. Maybe the Mariners might be a good trade partner, with the Mets for Dylan Gee. And I think you can agree with this. Right now, the Mariners understand that Willie Bloomquist probably isn't one of their best 25, but he's also making $3 million, and the Mariners will not eat that contract, which means the loser of that shortstop battle between Brad Miller and Chris Taylor, chances are, the loser of that is going to have to go to AAA, and I know for a fact that the organization does not want either one of those guys playing full-time, 600 at-bats in AAA because they're too good for it and it doesn't even matter. So this could possibly be a match where the Mariners might be able to pick up a dude like Dylan G, who's 28, who would look very fantastic in that rotation.
Right.
And the Mets possibly could end up getting a very good shortstop, and this is something that they need. So will he or won't Dylan G be moved?
I think he could be. I really think he could be. I think they were shopping him at the winter meetings, if I remember correctly.
They were. They've been shopping him all offseason.
Right.
And
yeah.
It's not that teams don't want him. It's right now. Right. It's not an issue of whether the Mets are asking too much or too little. That's not the issue. It's whether or not teams are willing to pull the trigger right now because they want to see how things shake out.
Right.
I mean, right.
Yeah. And look, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, let's say one of these trades happen, it's going to be way late in March.
Right.
It's going to be after teams have seen their rotation when their pitchers are pitching 5-6 innings instead of just 2. That's when they're going to really get a grasp of what's going on. And then you might see that Dylan G go.
This easily could be another opportunity for the Rangers, your Rangers, to check in, because right now Dillon G at the back end of that rotation would look absolutely fantastic, and you could actually use Ross Detweiler as a swing guy coming out of the bullpen. That would be fantastic, because he actually would be a better version of Alexi Ogando. You can envision him being that first lefty coming out of the bullpen when you need him in the later innings, but also if something should happen to, say, Yovani Gallardo or Derek Holland or Colby Lewis, knock on wood, nothing does, you have a guy who can come out of the pen because he's already been extended. Mm-hmm. And you're gonna be able to fill in, and you know that can also be a situation to look out for if you're also the Texas Rangers. And again, you know, the Rangers are very heavy in the minor league organization, so it's not going to be a situation where you would look at this and say, okay, well, you know, there couldn't be a match. I'm sure you'd be able to find a match somewhere in that Ranger organization.
Oh, sure.
Also, how about the name Jerickson Profar? I mean, this is a guy where right now, if Rougned Odor really takes off at second base, and you still have Elvis Andrus, who's 26, he's only 26, and still has that contract,
mm-hmm.
which is not an easily tradable contract, your middle infield is going to be sewn up, right? Yeah. This could be a situation where maybe the Rangers are going to be in a position where maybe they can afford to move a dude like Jerickson Profar. And I don't think it's going to be for Dillon G, but you get what I'm saying. The Rangers have options if they so choose to improve their rotation. They have options, so that's something to look forward to. The other name on this list is Andre Ether. Andre Ether is in a crowded outfield, and right now this is what's kind of funny about this. Ether is upset with the Dodgers, and he has every right to be upset with, because this is a guy who has a contract but has been probably one of the most loyal Dodgers.
Yeah.
If you think about just how the thing has played out over the last 5 years, he probably is one of the most loyalist Dodgers out there, and now they're in a situation where they have to play Jock Peterson at center field, and all of a sudden now you have Yasiel Puig in right field, and you have Carl Crawford, who, by the way, is healthy, but he's also making a lot of money. And so you have to play Carl Crawford, and that means Andre Ether is the last man out. And this is a guy who's very good against right-handed pitching, has improved a little bit, even from being 32, pushing 33. He got a little bit better with left-handed pitching, and he's basically saying, well, hey, where's the love?
Yep.
Where's the love? I have put in the work. I have paid my dues. This would, you know, I had a spot before you guys decided to take on a whole gluttony of contracts, and now all of a sudden, even though that you did move Matt Kemp, you know, I'm supposed to be a big part of this thing, and he has every right to have this beef. And this is a situation where you do the right thing, Bo, and actually do move him.
Yeah, I agree with you. This is a guy that absolutely could be traded before the season starts, especially in that situation. If he's not happy, and the Dodgers really don't want to carry that into the season, so they may try and move him there towards the end. And once again, team like Texas could pop up.
If
those guys have a bad spring, John Daniels might jump on and say, hey, you know, we could put Ether in left field and give these kids some more time. That could happen.
Now, don't get me wrong. There is some trouble with Andre Ether, because last year, you know, he did have trouble hitting average fastballs. And mechanically, it looked like maybe he was opening up a little too much, pulling off a little bit, and he was, in turn, instead of driving the ball, he was hitting lazy fly balls to the opposite field for outs. And even though that he has improved a little versus left-handed pitching, he basically is a very heavily paid platoon bat at this point. Last year, his OPS versus left-handed pitching was .567, which is not really it's horrible. But then again, you know, the question is now whether his decline of his diminishing bat speed or timing issues, you know, could be fixed with more playing time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But here's the thing. 3 years and $50 million are left on his deal, which means the Dodgers, in any situation, are going to have to eat a portion of it to move him.
Oh, they got plenty of money.
They're going to have to eat a little bit of it, which means, you know, they're going to have to be a fit. And you're absolutely right. Exactly. Potential fits. The Orioles, Rangers, Blue Jays.
Yeah.
The Rangers, you hit it right on the head. The Rangers are a very good fit for this one. And it's just going – and by the way, Dillon Gee – it's kind of funny. When you look at all these names, you said, what is the one team that always seems to come up? Your Texas Rangers. So it's kind of funny when you think about that. But, yeah, I would think so. And, you know, again, we've talked about the confines of what the Rangers are going to be able to do. They have the talent to match any deal with any Texas league.
Right.
Absolutely. How about this name, Carlos Quinton?
Definitely.
Age 32, has played he's only played in just 218 games over the past three seasons because he's basically been injured. this is not Carlos Quinton back when he was with the White Sox, where this dude was the ultimate pull hitter, and he fits so well with the White Sox and what they were able to do in that ballpark. The problem with him is he can't necessarily play the field anymore. He's not really an ideal candidate for first base. So this is basically like an American League team, either in a platoon situation, which he would be in the National League, or a straight-out DH.
Right.
And in this situation, again, we're talking about potential fits. Here's what this comes down to. Again, the Baltimore Orioles, yep, that's a fit, because right now you're looking at Stephen Pierce, and I know you like Stephen Pierce, but it's
like
Stephen Pierce. The Texas Rangers are also a team that's going to be in, that potentially could be in the mix for this one, because, again, left field situation, and even a platoon, and I'm going to say this, even with Mitch Moreland, because he can't really do that, he can't really hit left-handed pitching, so you might be able to have a counterpart there with left field and DH versus left-handed pitching, and also the Houston Astros could also be in a, in the mix here, and I think it would be a good fit to go to either one of these ballparks.
Yeah.
Because you're basically just isolating his at-bats versus left-handed pitching in a place like the ballpark in Arlington, where it does favor right-handed pull hitters.
Oh yeah,
that would be a very good. I think that would be a very good under-the-radar get. Say if the Rangers went out and got a dude like Carlos Quinton and just gave him half the at-bats, you keep him, you keep him healthy. Start off the season primarily as a platoon DH with Mitch Moreland, and maybe as the season goes on, and if you need that platoon bat in left field, then you can kind of give him that start every once in a while in left field. But you do that and you minimize the injury risk, and you can actually keep him healthy. And who knows, maybe Carlos Quinton actually could be could be a very good candidate to reestablish his value.
Could be, I think he might actually get moved, because they really need to move him.
Mm-hmm.
He cannot. He doesn't belong in the National League anymore.
No, he never.
Not even a little bit.
He never should have been in the National League to begin with.
That's valid. That's absolutely valid. And to my knowledge, his contract isn't exactly terrible and unmovable. So they really need to move him at some point this spring training. They really need to make that move.
Right, and the problem with being in San Diego is here's the deal, man. You got Will Venable, who most likely is going to have to be moved to, as well, too, but you have three corner outfields. You have three outfield positions. Nobody really can play center field. They're going to try Will Myers at center field, but they're going to have Upton. They're going to have Matt Kemp and right, Upton the left, and then the fourth outfielder is going to be the guy that should be playing center field, which is Cameron Maybin. But then you have Carlos Quinton, and then you have Will Venable. So the question easily becomes, number one, it's a roster crunch, because I can almost guarantee you that Bud Black is going to want to carry at least seven members in the bullpen.
Yeah.
Right. So right there, that's 12 members in the pitching staff, which basically means you only have four bench spots.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. I mean, you're not going to be able to. You don't want to carry a six-man bullpen. You don't want to have an 11-man pitching staff. You need at least 12, and so that means two of these guys are going to have to go, because you're not going to have a three-man. You're not going to have a backup catcher and then three outfielders.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to do that. You're going to carry at least a utility infielder, and then if you want to carry two outfielders, that's fine. You want to carry five, that's fine. But then again, one of them is going to be Cameron Maybin, and so are you going to carry Will? If you're going to keep Will Venable, then Carlos Quinton's going to have to go, because none of these guys are going to play in the minors.
Mm-hmm.
So one of these guys are going to have to go, and it's most likely going to be Carlos Quinton.
Yeah.
As he should be. And if you're A.J. Preller, who does have a relationship with John Daniels, because, obviously the two worked together in the same front office for the last 5 years.
Yep.
It seems like a pretty good match, considering both teams understand exactly who they have and who they don't have and who would actually fit. You would think that both the Padres and the Rangers could figure out a mutual way to, swap players and not try to one-up each other. You know what I mean? It's like it would be like a lateral trade.
Exactly.
Right. So The last name on this list is a name that I've spoken about at length this offseason. That is Alan Craig, outfielder, first baseman for the Boston Red Sox. And, listen, it's not hard to understand exactly why his stock has plummeted. His ISO against fastballs, which was actually his bread and butter in St. Louis, has plummeted since the highs of 2012. This is a guy who literally, at the very least, Bo, you can plug him in, because he's at least crushed the fastball, and he's not even doing that anymore. And he is now to a point where the Boston Red Sox are literally looking for a way to get him out of Boston. But the problem is the St. Louis Cardinals inked him to that big contract extension after the 2012 season. It was a 5-year deal, and he's got $20 million due over the next two seasons, and with a $13 million vesting option in 2007. So anybody's going to have to take him. You're going to have to put him in the right situation in order for him to thrive. You have to be able to figure out how he's going to be able to get some of those ISO numbers back up. This is a situation where it's going to be interesting to find out whether or not this is going to be an American League type of situation or whether this is going to be back to the National League type of situation. The potential fits on this are Cardinals, Dodgers, Rockies, and Orioles. So, I mean, obviously, the Orioles are always going to be in this one. Maybe even the Texas Rangers, because, again, he's a right-handed bat who can play first. He can also play some first, also play some outfield. You could also envision him maybe even at a platoon situation with the DH, like we were talking about with Carlos Quinton. The problem with this is he's owed $20
million. A lot of money.
It's a lot of money for a guy who can't hit the fastball anymore.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, I don't see Texas doing that just because of the money. I mean, they really need to kind of trim that roster, the payroll down a little bit after this season. So, you know, you might see some creativity in terms of the trade market. The Orioles, Angelos isn't going to spend that money.
Nope.
We both know that. He's not going to spend that kind of money.
The Rockies are an interesting fit, don't you think?
They're interesting, but at the same time, that's also a move you make when you think you're close to competing for a playoff spot.
I would say, you probably would, but for the Rockies that actually need to get better talent, this would actually make some
interesting
sense. Considering they don't have a first baseman, they don't really have a lot of good corner outfielders, out there outside of Carlos Gonzalez. This would actually be a pretty decent fit, I would think, for the Colorado Rockies. It makes no sense necessarily for the Dodgers, just considering that they already have a first baseman and they really have a glutton of outfielders. Andre Ether is named on the list. They're not going to trade Andre Ether and bring in a bat like Michael, Alan Craig just to sit on the bench. So the Dodgers, to me, make absolutely no sense because they're already in a numbers crunch with outfielders anyways. The Cardinals, maybe, considering he's familiar, there's a familiarity, and this is the team that gave him the extension. They moved him to Boston last year. Maybe this might be a situation where maybe the Cardinals come calling and say, I'll tell you what, you've got $20 million owed. How about you pick up half of it? We'll take him back if you pick up half.
Maybe.
Well, Bo, that's going to do it for us, man. We've hit that wall. This has actually been not a bad start to the Power Rally.
Not bad
start to the Power Rally. Next week we're going to return. Maybe we'll return with a little bit of a guest. I think I have something up my sleeve for next week. So maybe we'll do that. Next week we're going to cover the American League East a little bit next week, Bo, because I definitely want to get into that. Mm-hmm. We're definitely going to get into the National League West next week as well too, and of course news and notes and everything that's going to go along with the Power Rally. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Next week, same bat time, same bat channel. Bo, take us out.